to the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and once again tonight, the storm front to my river of dreams, it's Jamie.
Hey, Jamie.
Hey! Yeah, by the way, not that anyone not named, you know, Scott would care, but that's probably the first time I've used the same goofy option for my co-host's, you know, name in the introduction, because I called you Stormfront last time, I think, as
yes.
Well. The last time it was like Stormfront to, what was it, a Light Drizzle or something. But I remembered the very next day that from the very start of the season, I wanted to always use like two Billy Joel album titles in the beginning. And it didn't occur to me until the next day. It's like, all right, I'm using Stormfront again because I don't want to say it's going to be the last episode because maybe something will be in that episode that'll be even better. And I know I couldn't use Cuck Fluffer in this one because, you know, people would object calling you a Cuck Fluffer, I'm sure. I'm sure the hubs wouldn't appreciate it. So, anyway, obviously, we are here to talk about the latest episode of The Boys, which was titled Butcher Baker Candlestick Maker. And once again, I think we got a primo packed episode, a very good episode in my opinion.
To be sure.
Yeah. Now, taking the long view of the series up to this point, I think it's clear to anyone paying attention, one of the major themes has been parental relationships. And typically, the way I think the multiple ways, well, that they can be destructive. Boy, do I know about that. You know, sometimes sometimes it's something mild, you know, kind of like the way Huey's dad kind of holds the son back, you know, coddling him or pigeonholing him as someone weaker than he actually turned out to be. And, you know, you can run through the list through season one, whether it be Annie and her mom, the fact that Stillwell is a literal new mother for her mother, while she also acts as something of a crazy mother-son, almost incestual kind of relationship with Homelander. And, of course, there's also Homelander's own parental or lack thereof issues, which is what eventually leads us to the conclusion of that season when we meet his son. Now, this season, you still got some of that. I mean, I know Huey's dad has pretty much been secreted away somewhere, much like Mother Milk's family. So Simon Pegg didn't have to show up this season. But then you layer in the other things, like Becca and Ryan, and Butcher's previously spoken bad terms with his parents. And then we find out it's really all about his dad. And then I think even in this episode, you have Stormfront talking about a baby of hers from decades ago. And, oh, by the way, I'm putting even money down that we haven't heard the last about that one. And the fact that, in a way, you could say she's trying to take on a role of, like, the almost like a wicked stepmother for Ryan.
Oh, yes.
And, of course, going back to Homelander, I guess one really would look at Vogelbaum as kind of like a loveless father figure for Homelander. So, while there is a ton of fun and kind of shocking action stuff to plow through in this episode, I kind of wanted to start off talking about Billy Butcher and his dad, Sam, because come on. They got everybody's favorite guest appearing thespian, John Noble, to show up. You know, John Noble just raises the bar for whatever it is. Either it's something like this, it's not, you know, which wasn't surprising they got John Noble. They've been hitting it out of the park with guest stars over the last season or so. I mean, some of the really fine actors, whether it be when we originally saw Giancarlo Esposito or what's his name? Jim Beaver shows up briefly and is like, oh, Jim Beaver, he's great in everything. Breaking Bad, Deadwood, you name it. And now John Noble is like, you know, holy crap. And speaking of crap, it kind of sounds like Dad beat the crap out of both his sons. Only, I guess, the other brother, Lenny, didn't deal with it quite as well as Billy did. That's if you even really want to say that Billy really turned. The way Billy turned out is a plus. But unfortunately, Lenny apparently killed himself. Now, obviously, we don't know all the specifics of that. I don't know if we need to know more than we've already been told. So whether his father's abuse was directly tied to that or not, Billy certainly blames his dad for it. And then we get that really, I would say, one of the stronger scenes, certainly acting-wise, in the entire episode. And again, you get John Noble there, and I think I've already spoken about how really great an actor Carl Urban really is when you start looking at the breadth of his work. So getting these two little thespian titans, if you will, you know, screen together was a lot of fun.
I loved the argument, though. I will say I was really waiting for someone to go over the edge, or quite nearly go over the edge at some point. It wasn't the best space to have a physical confrontation, I don't think. But when he pushes his dad up against the wall and he gets the "it takes one to know one," it was so perfect, because that's something Butcher would say himself.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, I did have that level of concern during the whole scene, like, you know, it taking place on a terrace the way it was. Yeah. And I was like going, he's not going to throw his dad off, is he? I would say they're not going to go there that far. Then I was like, wait, this show goes far for plenty of stuff. Why
exactly? Exactly. I mean, I've had allergy attacks that would be unsafe on that terrace. You know, like, a couple sneezes too hard would have put me over the edge. So yeah, it was. I was waiting for it. I'm glad it didn't happen, but I thought it could.
Right. Oh, and speaking of guest stars, I should not to mention everyone ever shows up in all these episodes, just because, you know, if they're notable enough and it catches my eye and ear, I can't ignore the fact that Billy's mom is played, the actress is Leslie Nicole, but Downton Abbey fans will know her. That's Mrs. Pattimore. you know, she's not wearing the big bonnet on her head and everything, but it's Mrs.
Pattimore.
It was
nice to see her again. She is a likable lady.
Yeah, and when you see it, she was like, oh, she always looks a lot better and a lot younger than you think because of the character she plays. So that was lovely. It was also nice to see that, well, I don't know if I should say it was nice to see. It was interesting because it felt when we heard him talking to his aunt in a previous episode, we thought the issues were with both his parents. And it seems like, no, it's really about the father and the abuse. And, you know, maybe the mother should have stepped in or not, who's to say. But at least there is something, a semblance of relationship with his mother. Also, it's also interesting, you get John Noble. And I love that they did this. So I think that this is not a criticism at all. And one of the reasons you get someone like John Noble is John Noble has one of those great speaking voices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he instant gravitas. He's got that cool, just almost gravelly, but not quite thing. And I can think of shows that he's obviously, people know him, a lot of people. Anyone who was a Fringe fan loved him from Fringe. He was probably the best thing about Fringe for the most part. But also I'll point to things, whether it be his bizarre, in the title of the actual episode appearance in Legends of Tomorrow, which totally shocked everyone. It's like, I can't believe they got John Noble on the show. How they have the budget for that? Or if anyone out there watched the show Elementary and he played Sherlock's dad, every time he was on screen, it was just between him and Johnny, oh, I'm forgetting the actor's name who plays Sherlock on Elementary. Oh, bad Johnny. See what happens when I don't write a note? I just think of it in the top of my head, then I can't think of the last name. It'll come to me while we're doing the podcast. It'll just, in the middle of a conversation, be like, blah, blah, blah.
It just pops up. Yep.
But it's, you know, he did that thing with Benedict Cumberbatch where they both played Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster. Anyway, but it's interesting to have John Noble, but he's doing that act. He's doing the Brogue. So I was almost like, oh, I was expecting him to have his usual way of speaking. But instead, he's got the whole thing going. And it's like, oh, it's just, of course he would speak that way. Because Billy speaks that way. I just really liked it. And one of the things I really liked about it, and I probably have said this before, while I love the series taking the time for some definite character exploration, and this is another case of them really deepening the shades of a character like Billy Butcher, which they've done a couple times this season, I think they're really doing a great job of fleshing out that character to be more than just this belligerent anti-hero type.
Yes.
There is that little part of me, you know, that thinks it's kind of crazy to still be doing that. We've only got one episode to go this season.
No.
But at the same time, one of the things that's nice about a scene like this, even though it did have its level of tension, which results in him like putting him up against the wall, you know, whatever, it still, in a weird way, gives us kind of a moment to breathe during all the high stakes fireworks of what's really going on right now in the story.
Absolutely.
So it kind of works on a couple different levels. And I guess one can even say that Butcher's views on parental relations because of him and his dad may or may not color the way he sees all things Homelander. Whether it be, you know, the boy Ryan or Homelander's ersatz dad Vogelbaum. So it's, I don't think it's any coincidence when Butcher visits Vogelbaum later in the episode, because, you know, taking his shot at convincing him to, I guess, testify at the congressional hearings against Vought, you know, that something that Mallory and Mother's Milk failed to accomplish earlier. His way of going about it is to pretty much threaten to kill his entire family, his daughter, her kids, and so on. You know, destroy all parental relationships, so to speak.
Yes, yes.
And keeping up with that theme, at least for this point in the podcast, why don't we use that to segue to our next talking point and storyline in the episode. Let's bounce over to Annie and her mom. I don't know if there's that much to say more about them that we haven't already said in previous podcasts. Although I do feel they're at least trying to be a little bit, make us feel a little bit more sympathetic to her mom than in any previous episode.
Yeah, I kind of got that feeling too. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I guess maybe the veil of denial has kind of been wiped away from her mother, and she's kind of like seeing things a little bit more clearly, or maybe she's really understanding to some extent, not fully, of course, what her daughter has been going through, not just since she's become part of the Seven, of course, but just her entire life growing up, how she, everything she based her belief systems on and about herself was based on a lie. So, however, she's still foolish enough to pretty much unintentionally lead Black Nora straight to her daughter. So,
right. I think that, you know, there's a lot that can be hashed out at a pseudo Starbucks meeting between a mother and a daughter. But I would assume that having the store basically flip upside down on top of you is definitely going to help change your view of what your daughter's actually facing. It's going to give you the front row seat.
Yeah, I would say so. And then obviously, I mean, we know that, you know, Annie is subsequently being kept in some sort of cell that's neutralizing her powers. But we also see later on, they were keeping her mother prisoner too. So,
yes.
If you didn't know it before, you know it now, and you got a ringside seat with everybody else for the congressional hearings later, and you saw what stuff is really about, you know, there should be no more veil. Right, because obviously at this point, Annie slash Starlight, whatever we want, we'll just keep calling her Annie, she's been publicly branded a traitor by both Homelander and Starlight at this point.
Yes.
So, and again, while she's being kept on ice, that also allows us to kind of pivot in the story to, this was one of the funnier things in the episode, and creepy again, because they love getting the creepy factor in this show, to Huey and Lamplighter. Now, I'm calling Lamplighter out.
There was a lot there.
I'm calling him out, not because he likes to watch cuck porn. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Well, you know, maybe a little bit, but you know what? I'm certainly not one to call out another person's deviancies. But insisting on watching it with another dude in the room? That strikes me weird. That strikes me really weird. I've never gotten that. I remember hearing stories about, you know, when guys would get together, or kids get together, and let's watch porn together. It's like,
yeah, I've never figured that one out myself, but I mean, I guess, teach their own? I don't know.
If this was a different sort of podcast, I know exactly the the tangent or rabbit hole I would go down of things I don't understand. If you're presumably straight dudes, there are things you see. It's like, why would you want to both put them there? Because then you're, anyway.
Yeah.
But of course, it gives us one of the great lines in the entire episode.
Yeah.
When between Lamplighter and Huey, when, you know, they're trying to, you know, Huey's trying to relate to him and how, what he's done and how he's failed at things, whatever, and he's calling himself the cuck, and then Lamplighter says, "No, you're not the cuck. You're the cuck fluffer." And I went, Oh my God, I don't think there could be a lower thing on the porn totem pole, at least for on-camera people. You know, the guy who has to clean up after, I would say he's got the worst job. But on screen, the cock lover wouldn't be on screen, he'd be off. Anyway, you know what I mean. Anyway.
Yeah, see, and it also gave us one of our best cutaways, too. I don't know what it's called, but when they were showing the footage of Homelander and Stormfront basically like fake outsting Starlight as a traitor and all of that, and then it cuts to him and Huey being like, oh my God, that's fucking unbelievable, and then we think they're seeing that, and it shoots back over to their really weird soup porn that they're watching.
Well, yeah, you go. If I may, you go from Homelander and Starlight pumping up the crowd to a totally different kind of pumping.
Yes. It was very funny and slightly uncomfortable.
Yeah, just a little bit. And obviously the scene with Huey and Lamplighter does eventually lead to the big rescue attempt. Now, I knew that something was absolutely going to go horribly wrong with Lamplighter. I just knew it. I wasn't sure exactly how it was going to happen, but I just like, oh no, this might be the last episode for this character. I just know something bad is going to happen.
I had suspected that we weren't going to get some major joyous emotional redemption for his character.
Yeah, I think he briefly had his moment more so in the previous episode because he's kind of back to being more of an asshole in this one for the most part.
Definitely.
I do find it interesting, just from a geek point of view, superhero comic book geek style person that I am at times. It's interesting that someone who has their powers essentially are to start fires, and yet he himself is lit on fire. It's one of those things like, wow, you'd think that part of your abilities would be you are like kind of flame retardant as opposed to
would expect, but maybe if you he has the power to ignite himself from inside out, maybe there's something there.
Well, it's one of those things when I've kind of watched what he did, like when he was at Sage Grove and whatever, part of me was going, well, he has to like light a lighter. Or when he was doing the other thing, he had the scepter, which I guess he would use. So basically, I was like, are you just like a big can of hairspray or something? And you just blow through the flame?
It's
and
just it's like, filled it's like, with aerosol.
Are you just basically a flamethrower? Is that all you are? Big, no offense, big deal. You're no Human Torch, dude. I am sorry that I assumed just from the name Lamplighter and everything that you were supposed to be the Green Lantern of the group, because, dude, you might have the lamest powers in the group, and I'm saying that as someone who watches The Deep. You know, it's not that you two are pretty low on the totem pole as far as I'm concerned. You know, A-Train can both configuratively run circles around you guys. So we get the rescue that happens, and we get another fight with Black Noir again, and that's when Queen Maeve comes to the rescue, just when, you know, Annie's blacking out, looks like, you know, whatever. And I'll give him credit for an original way to deal with a situation when she basically pulls open his mask and jams an Almond Joy. There's an Almond Joy again.
That elusive Almond Joy.
I wonder if it was in Annie's pocket or something. Because he's got a tree nut allergy. And she even kicks away. I think he has like an EpiPen or something. And she kind of kicks it away from him. But it also
kryptonite.
And it also, we see, at least, you know, from the mask being partially pulled up, I was like, oh, looks like he is a black dude after all. So
do you think that he looked like he was? I thought he kind of, like, his skin was darker, but it looked, I don't know, I thought on our screen he almost looked greenish, like gray.
From what I could see when I watched it, and again, I could be wrong, of course. It happens way too often on these podcasts. It looked to me like he was a black dude who had some really intensive scarring.
Okay.
And again, if that is the case, then that's, again, one of those tropes we've seen with superhero characters over the years. I mean, yes. Obviously, Deadpool is horribly disfigured. Not that he's a superhero exactly, but whatever we want to call him. And there's actually several others that would fall under that category that, you know, I'm not going to get into because no one really cares, and you can just Google it yourself. Go look up, you know, scarred superheroes and find a few.
yes, do that.
Yes, feel typing. Oh wow, that was a very portentous sounding keyboard I did there. We already mentioned Homelander a number of times, so I'll slow it down a little bit. Let's rewind back a bit. And because I think we really want to talk about Homelander bringing Stormfront to Becca's place to meet his son. And hey, you know, there's a word Billy Butcher loves using quite a bit on this show. And we know, as he says in one scene, it means something a little, it has a different context or meaning, contextual meaning where he's from, not so much in America. Stormfront is the epitome of that word.
Yes. And I will tell you, I had this very close to the same conversation with my mother-in-law yesterday. And I told her that if you say it with a British or an Australian accent, you're in the clear because it doesn't mean the same thing.
Right. I'll do a deliberate bad accent. So if you say something like, oh, eh, you're a fucking cunt, you know. Sounds fine.
Yep. It's totally fine.
Yeah, but if you say, hey, yep. you're a fucking cunt, no.
Yep, that's different.
911. Anyway, they won't answer. Have you been around this year? Anyway, so. Wow. So, eventually in this scene that they, Ryan, who apparently is a little fickle, they turn Ryan against his mom. By exposing her lies to him. Now, I guess the lies are just about their entire setup of the neighborhood and the situation in life or something. I'm not clear how much they told him.
I'm going to tell you though, I'm going to have a little bit of a problem with that part right there, because up until this point, the kid seemed like a pretty, you know, as far as, you know, the way he thought and his brain seemed pretty good. His loyalty was to his mom. He seemed like a pretty smart cookie. But after that, I'm like, you're a moron. You didn't even say, prove that to me. Mm-hmm. Let's go look around. Let's take a look. Instead, he's like, no, I'm going to go with this weird guy that claims to be my superhero dad. And this woman who is very clearly got alternative plans. And I'm just going to fly off with them and leave the only mother I've ever known all alone.
I agree. I felt it was a little... I didn't quite believe it.
Right. It was a bit weird to me.
The only way I was able to accept it was thinking, well, kid's taking after his dad, apparently, because the kid's a little bit of a dick himself.
That could be. He could be carrying some of that... that asshole gene.
Hey, you know what? There's a tradition of that in television series. Even kids that we may eventually grow to like, but they go through those phases. I mean,
yep.
Sally Draper's can be kind of an asshole sometimes in some seasons of Mad Men. You know, not Bobby, but Sally. And don't get me started on Carl. Anyway. why would I reference that show? They leave together, and I kept thinking, oh, this isn't good.
No.
Because if Ryan really could become what if he truly follows his father's lead here, Becca's life is kind of dangling by a thread then.
Oh, absolutely. But it does give us a direction to head, you know, storyline, because who do you think that she is going to call for help?
Oh, absolutely. The question is, how is she going to call him? Does she have a means to contact him? Did he leave a number?
the abandoned mom hotline.
So, yeah. Cause you know, yeah, Bill, you know, cause Billy can relate to the kid because, you know, both got really horrible dads who, you know, like to commit violence on other people.
Right. But I mean, like, you know, honestly, that is just a really, really scary situation, though, that Becca would be in there with her son. And we've already seen how uncomfortable it is with Homelander. And then she brings in he brings in Stormfront. And again, in Stormfront's, like, just impeccable, stab them with a smile on your face. You know, she's just so wicked. She's so wicked. All these little things that she's dropping, that's making it very, very clear that Becca does not have the power. She no longer has control, and she's about to lose her son.
Right, right. If somehow we could ever forget Stormfront's modus operandi when she deals with people, her little undercutting of her yes. little comments. And she, there's no even hiding it here. It's not slyly insidious. She's really right up.
Yeah. It's just, it is. Yeah. And you know, I know that there are parents out there that are co-parenting, you know, they're separate and they're co-parenting their child. And then there is a new love interest to one of the parents or a step parent in the picture who likes to be quite menacing and tries to, you know, will try to take control in situations where it's not welcome. And I know in real life what that puts people through. To see it on a level like this when you know that person holds all, like, literally has the power of the universe within her own hands. God, that would be, it would be an awful place to be.
Yeah. And we already thought she was in a really bad place.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
She's been in a bad place all along. Then Homelander shows up once he becomes aware of it. And so it becomes 10,000 times worse that someone who could pretty much, you know, extinguish you with the blink of an eye, who, as far as we know, is your rapist again.
Right.
I believe the jury is still out on that.
I'm going to have to agree that my jury is also out on that.
Yeah. Part of it is just, and it's also because I think she would react more strongly to him.
Yes.
More negatively
yes.
to him.
I absolutely, there would be either like more anger, more fear. There would be more.
I don't want to speak for the way someone else deals with a horrific situation,
yes.
but the trauma of having been raped by someone, especially someone like that, whether you want to say it's a celebrity, which, you know, has its own kind of thing as well, and also someone who could, you know, kill you without really giving it a second thought and has already right. shown himself to be, you know, kind of a sociopath as far as that stuff, even though, you know, we can talk another time, either is Homelander a sociopath or a psychopath? Can you be both? Can you be, you know, people have this conversation all the time. Usually about their exes. So,
true.
But I would say, so you got, again, you have all this stuff throughout the episode with the parental relationships and all these things, but the thing that people are going to be talking about with this episode isn't any of these things. It's
no.
The entire episode, we're building up throughout the episode to these congressional hearings that are, I guess, that are set to not only expose, but really to try to take down the Vought Empire. That's what we've been building up to. We're trying to get witnesses for about the whole Compound V situation, what they're really up to, what did they know, when did they know it, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, quite frankly, to add fuel to the fire, you know, you had an episode that actually led off with a rather harrowing, sobering, and not funny sequence to start off the episode. It was like this loner dude. I don't think they ever gave him a name.
You know, yes, I put him, the boys, Hurley Reyes.
Right. And I guess I noticed someone we know on Facebook actually recognized him as the guy who plays Fat Neil from Community. And I was like, oh, yeah.
There you go.
I think it was Matt. I don't think he listens to the podcast, but I think it was Matt Treese who mentioned that. I was like, oh, that's right. Good call, Matt. But yeah, you see, you know, that this guy lives with his mom. You see him just waking up every day, going about his business. But he's also being increasingly exposed to like social media and mass media. TV screens apparently are everywhere. And you have pundits and soups talking about the evils of super terrorists in our midst. And a very, I know some people, they'll go right to what's going on in the world nowadays. And yes, absolutely, you could say that. My feeling on it, personally, it had more of a very post 9/11 vibe to it, more than anything that's going on in recent years. And all of that eventually leads to basically like a Travis Bickle in training, you know, fatally shooting that convenience store clerk that he would see every day. So
who was always a pretty decent dude.
Yeah, that's what makes it just,
as, you know, far as store clerks go, he seemed quite reasonable and kind.
Right. It wasn't like he was mistreating him every time and this just kind of fueled that and gave him an excuse. It's like, this is purely, you're different. And that one time he was there, there was the lights from outside when like a police car or something went by, and he just happened to look up when the light caught the guy's eyes, and he misinterpreted it as, oh, he had like a flash in his eyes or something like that. So you have an episode that starts off with what I would say is kind of a big swing. And the way it ends... So I have a theory that they went out because we were trying to figure out who's the one who killed Rainer, and you know, obviously we're speculating that it might be that woman that escaped that we saw from Sage Grove Center, because it's apparently an ability that she has. I like to think it's the head crusher from Kids in the Hall. That they went and got Mark McKinney. You know, so if you guys remember Kids, I'm hoping most of you watched Kids in the Hall at some point, and it's one of the better sketch comedy shows. You know, it's no Mr. Show, but it's up there. But I was the character who kept going, "You, I crush your head, I crush your head," and he's crushing people's heads from across the street, whatever. I was thinking about using the clip in the podcast, but I'm trying to be like, you know, not, you know, copyright free podcast. So I don't want to deal with that, because in that scene, I didn't count. I don't know if it was a dozen or 15 or 16 or how many people.
Oh yeah, we were definitely past a dozen by roll credits.
People are literally losing their heads. Again, much the same way they killed off Rainer in that first episode of the season. So,
oh my God. And just the chaos of it, because okay, first of all, just, you know, it's going to throw everybody back. The first one, obviously. Then the second one, and it's like, it just keeps going. You try to imagine something like that happening in real life. And in all honesty, it goes down to a really dark place. I mean, I don't want to get into the spiral of the dark place, but it's like they just showed us a mass shooter event without a physical weapon.
No, that's precisely how I would characterize it. But you're watching this whole thing unfold, and you're trying to figure out, is this, you know, was this part of a master plan? And, you know, is this the work of Cindy, the one that we saw leave the Sage Grove Center?
Is this a planned event? Is this someone just mentally toying?
Well, you know, the question is this something that, you know, the company Vought is actually behind? Will they manipulate this into further proof of super terrorist evils? Although I kind of wonder, just from a logic standpoint, although maybe one shouldn't apply logic to what a terrorist might do at times, of course, but why would a terrorist target hearings that are anti-Vought? You know, you'd think they would target something different, but then again, maybe it's because then someone can counter that very easily and say, well, it's because all the eyes of the world are on this.
Right.
So the stage is set. So it's not just it's not just doing this and, you know, maybe someone might have caught it on a cell phone or something, or happened to be on C-SPAN when 12 people are watching. No, this is being watched everywhere because of what the hearings were. You know, so imagine if this was happened during, like, you know, the Brett Kavanaugh hearings or something like that, or the O.J. Simpson trial, something, a news event everyone, you know, is watching, and something like that, certainly everyone would be watching in this universe. Yeah, and it's interesting, you're watching it, and clearly, whatever the master plan is, it didn't look like Homelander was in on it, because he seemed to not know what the hell was going on. oh, fire engines, like there must be something going on right there. You know, we do have a mosque nearby. Anyway, why did I say that? So, and we see, you know, the quote unquote, the boys, you know, or at least who's left of them there, Huey, Frenchie, Mother's Milk, Annie, Kimiko, Annie's mom, they're all watching, and you know, the looks of abject horror and disgust while it's all happening. I think I actually grabbed the picture. I think that's going to be the picture for the podcast, actually, because I just thought it was kind of funny.
How do you wrap your head around seeing something like that, even living in a world where you know these powers exist? You know? You know who these people are. There's these little moments where it's like, we can all relate on some level where you think that you can expect a certain amount of things, and then something happens that surpasses that. And in such a spectacle that it is.
Well, it was funny when you had that scene in the other in a previous episode, which turns out to be just a brief little fantasy in Homelander's mind. When he kind of heat visions, you know, the entire crowd, and we were like, oh, even though they didn't really, they cut away from Moses, they didn't really see much of that in close up, as far as I can recall. And they said, oh, okay, so we already prepared you. We're going to do something like that here, and we're going to put it right in your face. I mean, blood is going to spatter right over the camera in front of you, and pretty much every character, you know, is not going to get out of there clean.
Again, it shows you how great of a job that they are doing with the world that they've created, that it feels with such unrealistic levels of fantasy, it still feels so real, because they've, outside of the superhero part of it, they've kept everything very modern. The pop culture matches with ours. You know, they're always doing pop culture references to bring the story into more of a real place.
Right.
And then you see something like that, and it's, you know, there is some dark humor to it, but overall, the effect is fairly horrifying.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I mean, definitely dark humor to it. I mean, the violent level of this is something out of a South Park episode or something like that.
Yes.
It's just kind of how I've been describing the animated series Harley Quinn, and then they do it on this series where it's like, yeah, having everyone's head explode like that, that's something, you know, Stone and the other guy's name. On South Park would have done, because they're always blowing people up on that show.
So,
also interesting how, if you think about it, it seems like every time there's a great plan put into action to finally bring down Vought / Homelander or the whole lot of them, it doesn't quite work.
Yep, there's always something that gets in the way.
Yeah, I mean, go back to season one, though, everything that built up to that, and, you know, Butcher finally thought he had it. It's like, you know, no, doesn't care about Stilwell. She's dead. No, too bad. Next. And, you know, and everything that Annie did as far as trying to expose him, nope, they got around that, you know, everything. And now this, which we thought this would be the big thing, like, nope, you know, nope. What are you going to try now? Okay, at this point, it's like, what? I don't even... What's great about this? This is the penultimate episode of the season, obviously.
Yes.
What the hell noise is that? Jesus. I'm not sure if sometimes I don't know if the sounds are coming from your end or my end when I hear wacky noises. I honestly do not know what to expect whatsoever going into the final episode.
Me either.
I don't know where we go from here.
I thought I kind of saw, you know, something leading into something to something, and then everyone's head started blowing up, and I went, nope, we are definitely not going that direction anymore.
Right.
So I'm not sure.
I mean, the only, at least in my mind, of course, there's probably things I'm not thinking of because I haven't spent that much time thinking about it, quite frankly. Sorry, guys, bad podcaster. Well, you've got the thing that Maeve has with the video of what happened on the airline. And although that doesn't exactly isn't going to win her many points, it's certainly going to bring Homelander down. And apparently, just from the scene we saw when Black Noir was poised to kill Butcher, and he threatened to have information released that would pretty much indicate that Homelander had raped his wife and had a kid, and that's what led Edgar to let them be. So I guess that is something. I don't know if one or both of those things are quite enough. The Homelander thing, maybe, but after the way everything goes horribly wrong, I can't help but think that's not going to work either. And either that amounts to some sort of showdown between Queen Maeve and Homelander, so we really get a... Because I'm kind of curious, I mean, and again, this is the geeky side of me, you know, just looking at these quote-unquote superheroes, just what her power levels are. She's obviously been crafted to be the Wonder Woman kind of
yes, character. Absolutely.
And those who follow, you know, DC Comics over the, over several decades, they kind of go back and forth with Wonder Woman as far as what, just how strong, how, whatever. Is she on the same level as Superman or not? Sometimes she is depicted that way. Sometimes she's maybe a notch or two below, whatever. You know, I always think they're in the same ballpark. I mean, I think, I don't think she's quite Superman's level, but certainly she would be able to hold her own up for a while at least.
Yes.
He'd still end up beating her. But it wouldn't be like fighting, you know, something stupid like Batman. And of course, if it's Batman, he always wins, because Batman always has to win. Anyway, speaking of Queen Maeve, like we've said in previous podcasts, you've got all this main stuff, you know, the front burner stuff. But then you got storylines. I don't know if they're not even B storylines at this point. I'd say they're maybe C storylines. And the two that are still ongoing is the stuff with Queen Maeve. You know, we already mentioned, you know, she did the right thing by saving Annie, you know. But she has that other notable scene in the episode. And I don't mean the one with Elena, because, you know, yes, Elena's still horrified about what Maeve did or didn't do, or what else she might have done, and don't care, sorry. And another silly Brave Queen Maeve product, I think it's cereal or something we see in this episode. It was a scene when Ashley walks in on her. And, yes. Like, Maeve is in bed with a dude. Now, I'm guessing what Maeve is doing with this guy in bed is kind of her reacting after Elena left her earlier. Is that what that's about?
Well,
or was it a setup?
I would definitely say part of that. But, I mean, it's clear that Maeve set it up for Elena to leave.
Okay. So I'll go with that. It makes perfect sense to me. And I did like that one brief exchange between her and Ashley when, this is once again, even though I think I already have cursed in the podcast. I love that I didn't say cunt earlier, then I kept saying it later. Like, or not. But I do that, you know. But there's that exchange between her and Ashley when she says, for once in your life, be a fucking human being. And then there is that moment when Ashley actually is.
Yes.
When she says she actually says she's sorry. When you just see the glimmer of, because the only time we've seen Ashley be, you know, I don't want to say human, but, you know, but be empathetic, whatever, is not really so much empathetic as when she's scared for her life because of Homelander. You know, so.
Well, she's in a unique position. I mean, she's basically running PR and handling people with superhuman strength. She has to, what a strange place it would be, because you would have to be a yes man. I mean, because they could literally squish your head from 100 yards away.
Right.
But also you have to like keep them within the realm of what Vought wants its face to be. And for a moment she had to stop and see Maeve, see one of them, not as superhuman, not as a celebrity,
right?
But just a person capable of feelings.
But with her, what's interesting about her, however, is Homelander is the only one she's ever seemed frightened by or intimidated by. She doesn't give a damn about them having abilities. So she's spoken to Annie/Starlight any which way she's wanted from the word go. And Annie obviously has abilities that she could just like, yeah, you're gone. The way she spoke to A-Train on the set of the movie. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, and A-Train has the ability to just as much as anyone else, you know, anyone who knows people with super speed, like, you know, he can run through you and he can make you explode. That's how the whole damn thing started, you know? But
do you think that maybe there's something there, because so many of the others in the seven, it's almost as if they want it. I mean, it's not that Homelander doesn't want it. Obviously, he needs it. We've already gone into the depths of his need of approval. But there's this like there's this like, do you know what I mean? Like there's this lust for it. So she can always dangle that above them. It's always there. You know, you want this celebrity shit. It comes with responsibilities.
Well, it's about control. It's
yes.
And again, if there's one thing that's been repeated on this podcast, this is podcast number 274 podcasts. I'm going to say on at least 200 of those podcasts, something about control has come up because it's just that's usually the source of, you know, what a character wants, what a character needs, dramatic, you know, how drama is told pretty much, you know, and it's in the name of our podcast. And her position, as you said and pointed out, is unique, especially when you look at what she was in the first season and the position she's taken over in the second season.
Yes.
Which is, and it's fascinating because in the first season, yeah, she was to a certain extent an underling. She definitely, you know, she was, you know, under, you know, Stillwell, but still had her domain of authority. It could speak the way she wanted to people. It's interesting that she's kind of elevated, but when she finds out the whole story is, yeah, Homelander didn't just recommend you to get the job back. He wants you as his little puppet, so that way he finally knows everything that's going on the, what is it, the 81st floor? I forget, mm-hmm. forget which floor it is. I apologize if I got the number wrong. 81st, 82nd, whatever. And he instills fear in her. And the only other characters who have ever done that is, you know, maybe just the scariness of Black Noir standing next to you while you're working at a computer terminal or something. But he's, you know, kind of out and out, threatens people. So it's interesting that she's gotten more power and thus she would have more control, but she's also not in control because she's there, you know, because of Homelander. And at any moment, you know, you never know what can happen with that guy. She certainly knows what he's capable of. I don't know if she knows all the horrible things that have been done through by them through Vought or not. I don't get the impression she cares. But you never know. That's why this moment of humanity between her and Queen Maeve I thought was kind of interesting. Oh, okay, that gave her a little shading there. That's very nice to see. finally, the one other remaining thing that I can think of that happened in the episode that we haven't gotten to was got a little bit on the Church of the Collective once again with A-Train and the Deep. Felt like this was just there just to show us, you know, much the way Scientology is kind of infamously known for, how they can go after one of their own after they turn on them. I mean, anyone who's followed anything going on with Scientology over the last 20, 30 years, there have been situations where celebrities have gotten out of it. They've come out against them. They've written books, you know, Leah Remini, et cetera.
They've had to cut ties with their entire family, children, parents.
Right. And then the Scientology PR machine does what they do, you know, against them, whatever. And of course, you know, being the nature of this show, it's taken to a rather bizarre and ridiculous extreme where they're trying to paint this image of Eagle the Archer that he was getting it on with some dude who was actually dressed up as a deer. And I was just like, what? Because he's an archer, so he'd be a hunter. Is that why he's dressed as a deer? Is that why you went there? Okay. I'll go. It's a unique form of a furry, I guess. I don't know. But it was, but that's a real, I mean, unless I'm forgetting something, I feel that was we only got that really little bit on them.
Yeah, that's really all we got is, yeah, he's a great guy, wonderful guy. He's a toxic personality. You can never speak to him again. And I mean, and that's, but it was good because we had A-Train viewing that too. So, I mean, I don't know where they're going to go with it.
Right. At this point, because they're doing it in these very relatively minor ways, and we've only got one episode left, and again, I'm pure, obviously, what else can I do but purely speculate about this? I'm thinking it's maybe building up to something that will be in a subsequent season. I would be very surprised and kind of annoyed even if the quote-unquote Church of the Collective storyline ends in the next episode, because I feel like you didn't really do that much with it. I mean, the thing I want to see with that, which will then for me make it have more of a payoff, because right now it's to a certain extent, there's a comic relief aspect to it, but a very dark comic relief, I should say. But I want to see what kind of power they really have, because they're making these promises.
Yes.
Now that they can get them back into Seven, whatever. Is that true? Do they actually have that kind of power? Do they have that kind of sway with, you know, with the Vought company or with Edgar?
I would almost guess that this is why I say that if they have followed so many factions as they have thus far in comparison with Scientology, mm-hmm. I wouldn't expect that they're just going to stop at it. So my best guess would be is that it's not necessarily that they're going to be able to get them back into the Seven. I think they will use the Deep, maybe A-Train, but definitely the Deep as a recruiting tool to create whatever industry it is that they want to ultimately create that would be in rival with Vought.
Okay, I could see that. Which would be actually, I'm gonna take your thought and run with it for a minute here. One of the things I mentioned when we did the giant podcast was when I looked into differences between the comics in season one and deliberately stayed away from anything about season two other than Stormfront is a Nazi. I had mentioned that in the comics there were these other super teams. Much like the way it is in any comic book universe, whether it be DC or Marvel or whatever, you know, like in Marvel, it's not just the Avengers, it's the X-Men, it's the Fantastic Four.
Exactly.
It's an airplane flying really low, apparently, in Brooklyn.
It is.
Wow.
Quite loud.
And the windows are closed. And the same with DC, where you got the Justice League of America, of course, but you also got the Teen Titans, and you got the this, and the Doom Patrol, and the that, and whatever. So, yeah, but they haven't established, or at least they haven't mentioned, there being any other quote-unquote super teams in this universe. And maybe that's been a deliberate choice to go that route, because that could be what, the Church of the Collective might have in mind. So,
yes.
That's very interesting, because you've got those two on board, and you, yeah, that's a very interesting thought. And that could be something we see that would manifest more in season three. I mean, we do know the only thing I know about season three is that the character Soldier Boy is going to be part of it, who's kind of a Captain America like riff kind of a thing, which would be therefore another superhero could show up. I'm interested. Oh, that's very interesting. That could be very interesting. Anyway,
and I would like to just note too, since I know we're getting close to wrapping this up, I did not want to skip out on the best chair slide I have ever witnessed on film. when Butcher is when he's gone there and he's talking to sorry, his name just has escaped me, when he was trying to get him to come and testify.
Oh, Vogelbaum.
Yes, thank you, at the hearing. And every time he'd open his mouth, he'd just push that chair and slide it across the floor with like such deliberate fury. I would have rewound it and watched it a few more times if I would have had the chance, because that was... It was great.
I love that every little touch Butcher does in that scene has this nice little nasty.
The greatest. Yes. His like
the chair
his
thing.
Sip from
the
his
sip from
tea.
The tape. The sip from the tape. By the way, that
perfect.
that was my alternate choice for the picture for the podcast, was to just do a screen grab of him sipping the tea when he's giving the side
tea
eye.
Been so menacing.
Well, actually. Anyway. So really a very strong episode, leaving us in a place where There's only one episode left. Are you kidding me? Is it going to at least be a double-sized episode? I know with so much going on, I don't know if I have time for it, but now, no. I want a 2-hour episode. It's probably not. It's probably going to be like 1 hour and 5 minutes or something like that.
Right. We'll get an extra 5 minute, you know.
But I'm absolutely looking forward to it. Again, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, there are definitely story threads here that are going to be picked up, and the stuff obviously with Homelander and Ryan, you know, we left off this episode with him leaving with them. But then at the congressional hearings, I'm like, where's the kid? So I'm kind of wondering about that. By the way, where does Homelander live? Does he live at the tower? Or does he have his own Fortress of Solitude kind of take off on this? I'm kind of curious about that.
What's the next Rock Band t-shirt that Huey's going to wear for the first time? Because they're all really clean and look super brand new.
Are they going to play the damn Stormfront song like I keep telling you?
Will they play your song?
Will Flash have yellow boots? Oh, wait, wrong podcast. Anyway, my mantra for years. Give them fucking yellow boots already. All righty. So with all that said, definitely looking forward to it. Be curious once we've seen that episode, and we'll talk about that and how everything wrapped up and where they're going to go with it. And then we can kind of take a look back and decide, which was better, season one or season two? Don't know. Because right now I'm kind of, I'm not sure. It's interesting. I'm kind of wavering here. My preference would be to say, I can't decide. I think it's just, they're just two really good seasons side by side. And that would be a pussy, waffly way of dealing with it. So I'll probably give you a real answer. All right. Anyway, I'm rambling, which means I really should start wrapping up this podcast. So if you enjoy this podcast, guess what? You'll enjoy hanging out on our Facebook page as well. It's the Serious TV Drama Podcast page. Like the page, and you can join the conversation about shows like The Boys, like Fargo, where you can hear the amazing opening and closing themes composed by your lovely husband, who I've never spoken to, but based on you and based on the music, he must be lovely. He friended me on Facebook for some reason, so there, he must be lovely. So, no, I appreciate
sure,
that.
Sure, yes, lovely.
I don't know if I need to credit him on every podcast, but I will for the first few, because I keep enjoying listening to it. It's like, I just really like this music. Yeah, so if you guys listen to the Fargo podcast, Jamie's husband, Chris, actually, composed and played the opening and closing themes that we're using there. And I've said on that podcast already, there's a very strong likelihood I'm going to be using that for most of our podcasts moving forward. Not this one. Doesn't feel right for The Boys. And if I do any superhero-y stuff in the future, which is likely, not for those, but Better Call Saul? Absolutely. Sounds perfect for Better Call Saul. Anyway, I digress.
Good stuff.
Gotta hurry up. I gotta go watch a Yankee game. So, what else? Oh, if you want to track down all 274 of our podcasts, you can find it on the provider, whatever you call it. Always the host for our podcast, which is Podbean. You go to stvdpodcast.podbean.com. They're all there. Don't worry if you go into older episodes and you find a few that say forbidden. Yeah, you click on them, they play. That's a lie. That's fake news. You can also go to Apple Podcasts, subscribe to our feed there, and where you can rate and review our podcast. You can just Google Serious TV Drama Podcast or STVD Podcast, and you'll find us 8 billion other places. You can be one of the only people in the world who'll ever listen to us on YouTube if you like. Why not? And finally, you can follow us on Twitter. Our handle there is at STVD Podcast. That's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. So, as I said, we will be back next week, recording at some point on Monday to deliver you Tuesday morning our coverage on the final episode of The Boys. And also, Brian and I will be covering Fargo the night before. Kind of a Sunday, Monday thing, which I guess will end with the last episode of The Boys. And then later in the month, we'll be commencing, the series called, you know, of the greatest TV dramas, episodes, whatever, of all time. You know, that'll be cool. I gotta start putting that all together and start soliciting co-hosts and shit. So that's it. So, Jamie, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. Again, you You bring the actual insight where I bring the blah, whatever.
Yeah, sure. You bet. Thanks for having me every week. It's good stuff. Makes Mondays better.
Oh, if I had a nickel for every... Anyway, all right. So, again, good night, Jamie. Good night to everybody out there, and talk to you soon.